Mahabharata, Chapter 41, The Kings Choose Sides. While both the Kauravas and the Pandavas were preparing for war, Krishna and the Yadavas returned to Dwarka. Duryodhan heard of Krishna's arrival and decided to go personally to ask for his assistance. Having learned from his spies of the Pandavas' preparations, the Kuru monarch had already sent messengers to every part of the globe to seek other kings' assistance. But Krishna was so powerful that he warranted a personal request. Krishna and the Yadavas were the greatest warriors on earth. If Duryodhan could secure their assistance, then the Pandavas would stand no chance. Krishna was their main support. Accompanied only by a few bodyguards, Duryodhan mounted the best of his horses and set out for Dwarka at a gallop. In Virata, Arjuna also thought of Krishna. After consulting Yudhisthira, he too decided to go personally to seek his friend's help. Leaving in a swift chariot, he soon arrived in Dwarka. As he reached Krishna's palace, he saw the palace guards receiving Duryodhan. The two princes, after greeting each other in a friendly way, went together to Krishna's chamber. They found him asleep on a large bed. One of his wives was fanning him gently. Duryodhan went straight to the head of the bed and sat down. But Arjuna remained at Krishna's feet, standing with palms folded and gazing at his face with tears of affection in his eyes. After a while, Krishna awoke. As he opened his eyes, he saw Arjuna, who bowed to him in love. Then Krishna sat up and saw Duryodhan by his head. He immediately welcomed both visitors. After honoring them, he inquired why they had each come. Duryodhan replied, "It is well known that you are equally disposed toward both myself and Arjuna. I have come here to ask your assistance in the war which will soon be fought among us. Indeed, O killer of Madhu, I arrive before Arjuna, and thus it is only right that you assist me rather than him. This is the practice of good men, and you, Krishna, are the best of men." Krishna looked smilingly at Duryodhan. "I accept that you arrive first, O king, but I saw Arjuna first. Therefore I think I will help both of you. Scripture ordains that one should help the youngest first, so I will first offer my assistance to Arjuna. I have an army of 1,000,000 soldiers, known as the Narayans, all equal to me in battle. Let one of you take them, and the other can take me alone. But I will not fight. Indeed, I plan to leave my weapons aside during the entire battle. O son of Kunti, what do you choose?" Without hesitating, Arjuna chose Krishna. Duryodhan could hardly conceal his joy. Arjuna's sentimentality had overpowered his reason. He had forsaken Krishna's invincible army in favor of Krishna himself, who would not even fight. What a mistake! Smiling slightly, Duryodhan said, "It seems that I am left with the army. With your permission, O Keshava, I shall now depart." Having received Krishna's army, Duryodhan thanked him and left. He made his way to Balaram's palace. He knew that Balaram was always favorable toward him. Surely he would take his side in the war. Duryodhan found Balaram seated in his palace. After greeting him with words of affection and praise, Duryodhan submitted his plea. Balaram, his hand resting on his plow weapon, looked grave. "O son of Kuru, for your sake I spoke out in Virata's assembly at the time of Abhimanyu's marriage. I pointed out to Krishna that our relations with you and the Pandavas are equal, and that your cause is as just as that of the Pandavas. O hero, Keshava did not accept my words. I cannot for a moment exist apart from Krishna. Therefore I have decided to help neither side. I will take no part whatsoever in the upcoming war. Fight according to Kshatriya principles, O best of men. May good fortune be yours." Balaram stood up and embraced Duryodhan. Knowing that Krishna had sided with the Pandavas, he considered the Kauravas already defeated. Duryodhan left Balaram's palace and went to see Krittavarma, the Yadava commander-in-chief. He asked for his help, and Krittavarma, in accordance with Kshatriya custom, could not refuse. He agreed to fight on the Kaurava side, along with the million warriors already given by Krishna. Thus he gathered the army and prepared to leave with Duryodhan. Surrounded by the terrible-looking forces and with Kritavarma by his side, Duryodhan headed back toward Hastinapur with a light heart. In Krishna's chamber, Arjuna and Krishna were alone. Krishna asked, "Why did you choose me, knowing I will not fight over my army?" "There is no doubt that wherever you are, there will be victory. If you desired it, you could slay all the Kurus. In your presence, O foremost among men, I too will be able to kill them all. You are the most famous and illustrious person in the world, and I will attain a similar fame by gaining victory in this war. O Krishna, it has long been my desire that you act as my charioteer. Please fulfill my desire, if you find it acceptable. It is fitting, O son of Kunti, that you measure yourself against me," Krishna replied softly. He placed a bejeweled hand on Arjuna's shoulder. "I shall gladly act as your charioteer. Let your desire be fulfilled." The two friends spent some time together in Dwarka and then prepared to leave. Surrounded by many Yadu chiefs and warriors, they set off for Varata. King Shalya of Madras received news about the impending war. As the brother of Pandu's second wife, Madri, he wanted to assist his nephews, the Pandavas. He had already formed a strong relationship with Yudhisthira, and he longed to see him again. Taking his army, he left his city to go to Virata. While traveling, Shalya's army occupied an area of 4 square miles. With their flashing armor and bright pendants, they appeared like a moving sea covered with gems. They traveled in slow marches toward Virata, shaking the earth and sending up massive clouds of dust. Hearing that the Madras army was on the move, Duryodhan arranged a regal reception for them along the way. He had palaces erected in charming spots, well decorated with gems. The Kaurava sent artists for their entertainment and had the best of food and drink laid out for the entire army. Artificial lakes adorned with lotuses and fountains were constructed, with fine seats arranged around them. As Shalya approached each place, he was greeted by thousands of Brahmins, who received him with worship and adoration. He was shown to a palace that would have been suitable for the gods. Greeted with honors befitting Indra, Shalya was pleased, thinking too highly of himself and too little of the king of the gods. Assuming that Yudhisthira had made all the arrangements, he asked his servants, "Where are Yudhisthira's men? Fetch them, for I would like to reward them." The servants looked surprised. They went to Duryodhan, who had remained concealed from Shalya, and informed him of everything. When Shalya had become so pleased that he was ready to give away even his life, Duryodhan revealed himself. Bowing before his maternal uncle, the Kaurava prince said, "You are welcome. Please instruct me what else I can do for you." It was Shalya's turn to be surprised. He embraced Duryodhan and replied, "I am satisfied by your reception. Ask from me whatever you desire." Duryodhan folded his palms. "Grant me an auspicious boon, O illustrious man. Become a leader in my army." Shalya realized that he had been tricked, but out of honor he could not refuse Duryodhan's request. He replied, "It is done. What else do you desire?" Duryodhan said he had no other desire. With joy he continued to repeat Shalya's words, "It is done." Disappointed that he would now be opposing the Pandavas in battle, Shalya said, "O king, O best among men, go back to your capital. You shall soon see me there. But first I want to see Yudhisthira. Then I will come and join your army. You may go, but please return quickly. I am depending on you. Do not forget your promise." After embracing, the two men parted, and Shalya continued on to Virata. He saw the Pandavas there and was greeted by all of them with respect. They embraced him and sat him on a beautiful seat. Shalya gazed at his nephews with tear-filled eyes. "It is good to see all you heroes hale and hearty after your exile. How have you passed these last 13 years? Nothing but misery attends one who has lost a kingdom. But now your suffering, brought on by Dhritarashtra's son, will end as you slay your enemies. Shalya looked at Yudhisthira sitting at his feet. O great devotee of God, no one has seen even a trace of greed in your character. Like the Rishi kings of old, you exhibit self-control, forgiveness, truth, nonviolence, and all the other qualities that are so rare in this world. You are mild, generous, religious, and attached to virtue. O chief among kings, it is fortunate that I am able to see you freed at last from your difficulties. Shalya then told Yudhisthira about his meeting with Duryodhan and his promise to the Kaurava prince. Although Yudhisthira was disappointed, he agreed that it was a point of honor. He said, O king, you have done the right thing by granting such a boon when you were pleased at heart. You had no choice, and I do not criticize you for it. Still, I have a request. You can do us a great favor in the coming war with our cousins. It is well known that you are a charioteer without equal in this world. I have no doubt that when the final battle takes place between Arjuna and Karna, you will be asked to drive Karna's chariot. At that time, you should do whatever you can to discourage Karna and take away his energy to fight. Although it is improper to ask this of you, O hero, still I ask it out of fear of the Suta's son. We must by any and all means defeat that evil-minded one. Shalya felt pleased that although he had been forced into fighting for Duryodhan, there was still something he could do for Yudhisthira. The news of the Pandavas' exile had greatly upset him. It was outrageous that the Kurus had allowed such a thing to happen. His brother-in-law Pandu would have been mortified if he had been alive. How could the Kurus expect any good fortune when they injured men of the Pandavas' caliber, and especially when they insulted a woman like Draupadi? Shalya said, I will surely do as you ask, O noble-minded one. I do not doubt that Duryodhan will have me drive Karna's chariot. At that time, I will say those things which are calculated to deprive him of energy. O king, all the miseries that you have endured at Duryodhan and Karna's hands will soon give rise to your happiness. This is the way of the world, O hero. Do not blame yourself. Everything is under the control of supreme destiny. It is the Lord's arrangement only that great personalities like you suffer difficulties. Even the gods are sometimes obliged to suffer. I've heard that Indra has had to endure such misery along with his queen. Yudhisthira asked Shalya to tell the story of Indra and how he had suffered. The Madras king recited the history in detail. Shalya was well known for his wisdom and knowledge, and even the Brahmins came forward to hear him speak. After speaking with the Pandavas for hours, it was time for Shalya to depart. Yudhisthira again worshipped him with due honor and reminded him of his promise. Assuring Yudhisthira that he would do whatever he could to assist him, Shalya bid the Pandavas farewell and made his way to Hastinapur. Soon after Shalya's departure, Satyaki returned from Dwarka. He brought with him a huge army consisting of chariots, horsemen, elephants, and infantry. Bearing battle axes, swords, spears, lances, mallets, clubs, maces, and bows of all sorts, the army appeared like clouds with lightning. A full Akshahini in number, it merged with Yudhisthira's forces like a river entering the sea. One after another, different kings came to Yudhisthira's side. Drishtaketu, the king of the Chedis, came along with another Akshahini division, as did the king of Magda, Jayatsena. The two kings, Pandya and Virata, also each supplied an Akshahini of powerful warriors. Finally, Drupada brought his army, assembled from various countries and led by his two sons, which amounted to two full Akshahinis. Within only a few months, seven Akshahinis stood ready at Virata to fight with the Pandavas. In Hastinapur, various other kings were coming to assist Duryodhan. They amassed 11 Akshahinis. The soldiers crowded Hastinapur and its surrounding regions, so that there was hardly any free space anywhere. Duryodhan had arranged for a vast army of Vaishyas and Sudras, greater in number than even the warriors themselves, to ensure that the soldiers received sufficient care while they awaited the order to march into battle. All that remained to be done was to meet with the Pandavas or their emissaries. If no agreement could be reached, and Duryodhan planned for no agreements, then the war would begin. The Kurus, informed that a messenger was on his way, waited expectantly. Jupiter's priests arrived at Hastinapur soon after the troops had assembled. As he approached the city from a distance, he saw those soldiers camped everywhere, like masses of clouds descended to earth. Entering Hastinapur, he made his way through the crowds and came to Dhritarashtra's palace, where he was received by the king himself, along with Bhishma and Vidura. They brought him straight to the royal court. After worshipping him with argya and other offerings, they invited him to address the assembly. Looking around at the many kings and ministers seated in Dhritarashtra's great hall, the priest spoke. As you all know, Dhritarashtra and Pandu are brothers. Therefore, their claim to the paternal kingdom is equal. No one doubts this to be true. Yet although Dhritarashtra's sons have inherited their share of the kingdom, the Pandavas have been denied theirs. Dhritarashtra's sons wrestle the Pandavas' kingdom and wealth, which they had fairly acquired through the practice of virtue. Even before that, the Kauravas attempted to kill their honest cousins in different ways. Because the Pandavas' life duration has not expired, the Kauravas were unsuccessful in their attempts. Despite all this, Yudhisthira bears no ill will toward them. He has accepted all tribulations without complaint. Now he wishes only to have his rightful property returned. Although he has suffered the severest miseries, in this court, in the forest, and at Virata, he does not long for war. The priest paused and looked at Dhritarashtra. The blind king shifted uncomfortably on his throne. Shafts of sunlight entered through the latticed windows, illuminating his pained expression. By his side, Bhishma and Vidura slowly shook their heads, remembering again the terrible day when Pandu's sons had been sent away. They looked intently at the priest as he continued. The Pandavas wish for a peaceful settlement. They do not want to gain back what is theirs by ruining the world. Forgetting their troubles these last 13 years, they are prepared to live in friendship with their cousins, but their kingdom must be returned. They have gathered 7 Akshahinis and prepared them for battle. Although you have a greater force, you should not consider yourselves more powerful. The Pandavas have Krishna on their side, who possesses inconceivable power. They are also assisted by Drupada, Pandya, Drishtadyumna, Sikandi, and other mighty monarchs. Each of the Pandava brothers is a Maharata. Arjuna alone exceeds the strength of your entire army, O descendants of Bharata. What man would dare face Dhananjaya when he comes out to fight, his chariot guided by the immortal Keshava? Therefore act according to virtue. Give back what should be returned. Do not miss this opportunity. The assembly remained silent when the priest had stopped speaking. Everyone's eyes turned toward Dhritarashtra. It was up to him to respond. The Kuru monarch said nothing. Duryodhan smiled and glanced at Karna. The old priest was wasting his time. They had an army almost twice the size of the Pandavas' forces. Where was the question of surrendering anything to Yudhisthira? The Kaurava prince looked around the assembly at the silent kings and ministers. Bhishma broke the silence. He thanked and praised the priest with gentle words. Then he said, O learned one, it is fortunate that the Pandavas are doing well, and that they have secured the assistance of many kings. It is especially fortunate that Damodar, Krishna, has taken their part. It is fortunate indeed that they desire to act virtuously, and that they wish for peace. You have spoken the truth. Your words are sharp, in keeping with your status as a Brahmin. All the Pandavas have borne many troubles and are certainly entitled to their father's wealth. Not even the holder of the thunderbolt could keep them from that. What to speak of those bearing the bow? There is little doubt, as you say, that Arjuna alone can defeat our army. He could stand against the three worlds. Karna sprung to his feet. Catching Duryodhan's eye, he barked at the priest, insolently interrupting Bhishma. "Oh, Brahman, you are wasting your time. Yudhisthira was fairly defeated and went to the forest in accordance with his vow. I do not believe that the prescribed turn has even ended. Why then are the Pandavas demanding their kingdom? Duryodhan will not yield even an inch of land out of fear, but out of virtue he could give the entire earth. Let the Pandavas first keep their vow, and then come humbly back before Duryodhan, who will doubtlessly afford them refuge. If they desire to abandon righteousness and seek battle, however, they will meet only grief." Karna glared. Both he and Duryodhan refused to accept that the Pandavas had fulfilled their vow. They did not believe that Bhishma's astronomical calculations were correct. According to their own estimations, there were a few months left. Duryodhan would not even consider negotiating with the Pandavas. The prince nodded in agreement as his friend spoke. Bhishma turned toward Karna. "O son of Radha, why do you talk so much? Do you not recall how during the fight in the Matsya kingdom, Arjuna single-handedly defeated all of our principal warriors, including you? You have seen his prowess often enough. If we do not do what this Brahmin says, we will all be killed." Some of the kings present agreed with Bhishma, while others praised Karna. The hall buzzed with voices, and Dhritarashtra raised his hand for silence. He rebuked Karna and then solaced Bhishma. Then he addressed the assembly. "In my opinion, Bhishma has spoken well. He speaks for our interest and for the interest of the entire world. I need time to deliberate. Let the assembly be adjourned. O Brahman, go back to the Pandavas and tell them that I shall send Sanjaya soon with my reply." After the priest had been worshipped by Dhritarashtra's court Brahmins, he left the assembly. Everyone then returned to their own abodes, leaving Dhritarashtra alone with his personal servants. The blind king pressed his hands together. There was no doubt that Bhishma had spoken wisely, as he always did. Dhritarashtra could not ignore his assessment of the situation, especially when it was shared by Vidura, Drona, and Kripa. These were all learned and virtuous men. Now they were imploring him to control Duryodhan and return Yudhisthira's kingdom to him. But whenever he spoke to his son, he felt powerless in his hands. Even when he tried to instruct Duryodhan in righteousness, Duryodhan simply laughed. The prince's view of righteousness did not include justice for the Pandavas. It seemed that providence was in control, and that they were all moving inevitably towards some divine plan. Dhritarashtra sighed and loosened his heavy royal robes. Perhaps he should have taken stern action and have his son chastised and even imprisoned. But he simply felt unable. All he could do was advise the prince for his own good. After that, it was between him and his own destiny how he chose to act. The king called for Sanjaya. Sanjaya was intelligent and affectionate toward the Pandavas. He would certainly be the best man to send as an envoy to them. He would know what to say to pacify them. Perhaps he would even be able to prevent a war. Sanjaya entered the room, and after he had announced himself, Dhritarashtra said, "O Sanjaya, the sons of Pandu are now living in Virata. Please go to them and convey my feelings. O learned one, I have never heard of faults in these men. Even now, after suffering so much at our hands, they remain friendly toward us. They act only to acquire virtue and never fall into ignorance, folly, or laziness. Those heroes have conquered their senses and live only for others' benefit. They have no enemies other than the great weak-brained fool, my son, Duryodhan, and the still meaner Karna. Duryodhan is strong only at the beginning of endeavors because he is so given to indulgence. Still, he thinks himself capable of robbing the Pandavas of their rightful share. Who could hope to stand against Yudhisthira, Keshava, Arjuna, Bhima, Madri's twin sons, Satyaki, and the other great kings? Indeed, Arjuna alone, with Krishna guiding his chariot, can subdue the three worlds. His arrows fly in clouds, roaring like thunder, and sweeping away everything in their path. Dhritarashtra had thought about the upcoming battle again and again. He knew his sons did not stand a chance. Although they had a bigger army, that would not stop the Pandavas from winning, assisted as they were by Krishna. Dhritarashtra revealed his fears to Sanjaya. No one can hope to conquer Krishna. He is always victorious. He is the best of all men and the Lord of the worlds. With his support, the Pandavas could, I am certain, stand against the celestial host, headed by Indra and Mahadev. Just he and Arjuna together have already shown their power at Khandava. What then can we expect when they are united with Bhima and the twins? Our army is finished. The Pandavas' power is inestimable. O Sanjaya, let me tell you about the other kings who have rallied to their cause. Dhritarashtra had already heard from his spies about the situation in Varata. After listing all the kings supporting the Pandavas, he again turned to the discussion of Krishna. It was Krishna he feared. Just see how easily he had slain the mighty Shishupal, Naraka, Kamsa, and so many others. He is surely Vishnu incarnate. Thinking of Krishna's power and Vishnu's deeds in former ages, I find no peace, O son of Gavalgani. Perhaps the only person I fear more is Yudhisthira. I do not fear anyone as I fear him. He has long practiced austerity and dedicated himself to virtue. Whoever receives his wrath will be consumed like a reed falling into fire. His cause is just. This also frightens me. Therefore go on a swift car to the high-minded Pandava and speak affectionate and kind words. Tell him that I desire peace and will comply with any request he makes. Inquire after his welfare and that of his friends and followers. Say whatever you feel is appropriate to promote the interests of our race. Do not speak anything which will give rise to hostility. Without offering assurance that the Pandavas would regain their kingdom, Dhritarashtra gave his own message to Sanjaya and asked him to leave at once.